Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Ramble Meets is sponsored by Bet365.
Laura Woods, broadcaster. I'll stick chewing gum anywhere.
Laura, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thanks
for being here with us. You seem very happy to be here as well.
I'm excited.
You're always so smiling and happy. It's good. You're a great person to work with on that point of view. I mean, the professionalism stuff aside, you are always very, very fun to work with. When did you first love football? When did you first sort of become aware of loving football? Is it due to a family member, or is it just something you picked up, or what?
I didn't really have a chance to not love football. So I didn't really have an option when I was younger, because I'm the smallest child of three, and I have two big brothers.
Right.
And when we were younger, my granddad used to live next door to Highbury. So he used to sneak into Highbury when football stadiums were a little bit different to how they are now, and the old Highbury and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
He used to sneak in. He used to live in North London, used to live around there. So when we were younger, you just get born into that sort of thing, don't you? And I remember my brothers used to make me go in goal. So when we play outside, I didn't have an option. My brothers would always say to me, "You're really good in goal. Did you know that? You're a great goalkeeper." And I'd be like, "Really? Am I?" And it was just because they just wanted to run around scoring goals.
How much younger were you?
We're all quite close in age. So my older brother is 3 years older than me, and my middle brother is 1 year older than me.
Okay.
So the three of us were all born in 4 years. So my mum and dad had a bit of a time of it. And then we all grew up together. We all loved Arsenal. My dad actually is a Newcastle fan though.
Okay.
But we never went that way. And, you know, we lived in the South, and that was just the way that we went. And it was like the eras. I just remember having all of these little A4 paper posters that used to take out the football magazines of the Arsenal teams around my room. So the top just between the wall and the ceiling, I'd have Arsenal players on there.
Oh, because like those old school bedrooms, they probably still got one of those like picture frame lines, don't they? So you used to put Arsenal players, who were your favourite players?
I always remember Freddie Ljungberg for so long was my favourite.
Yeah.
Dennis Bergkamp. I even liked Marc Overmars. Emmanuel Petit I was obsessed with.
Yeah.
I remember the World Cup. When he came off the bench and scored, what was that? 98. Vieira as well.
Yeah.
Henri wasn't there yet. So that was sort of like before Henri's time. But those were the days. I remember watching that final as well, Brazil-France. I remember watching it so and remembering it so clearly. And because they were superstars of my time, especially when I was younger.
Did you think yourself a bit later on, perhaps, I want to work in football? Or was it something that you had an interest in broadcasting as well, separately? You had an interest in the media separately?
I took a detour. So when I was younger, I used to play rugby. So football we'd play like at school, you know, in the playgrounds and stuff like that. But when we were younger, my mum, my parents broke up when I was quite little, when I was about three. And as a way of trying to get something that we could all do together, my mum took us to the local rugby club. Mm-hmm. And she became a coach there. So she used to coach rugby and she also trained to be a referee as well. So she was brilliant. And this, you know, amazing, active mum. And my mum was so beautiful. Like, she is so beautiful. Mm. When she was younger, we used to go to this rugby club and, you know, like, she was funny as well. So, like, she just had guys falling over. It was hilarious. Right,
yeah.
And then these three little kids running around. And me and my brothers were all in different age groups at rugby. So that was like our focus as well, in terms of we used to play rugby. My brothers and me would probably knock a football around at school. But for a little while, it was all about rugby when we were little. And then I went through school and I just was very interested in sport. It was just something that I felt quite natural. Me and my brothers have this sort of, you know, some people just have a natural ability. They can just play with anything. They can knock anything around and it doesn't seem to be a problem.
I've heard that.
I've never experienced that. My older brother especially is just good at anything he does. He's like a duck to water. Like, he went skiing for the first time probably when he was 18 and he was brilliant.
Right.
So that's the kind of thing. Like, we were just very into it. So I used to play hockey, I used to play netball, football. Never rugby at school, it was always outside of school. We'd just basically do anything that was on offer. So it was always that kind of area, that sort of activeness came natural to me. And then I also really enjoyed writing at school. That was the one thing at school that I actually quite liked doing. I enjoyed English and I enjoyed PE. And then I remember it was, do you remember Press Packer for Newsround?
Yes.
Remember the show Newsround?
Yeah.
I used to watch that and you could apply to be a press packer, so you could be one of their mini reporters.
Don't tell me you were a press packer.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
They never picked me.
Okay, right.
It devastated me. I used to apply for it.
It's a damning indictment of their policy. Now you're doing it professionally,
100%.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Next time they ask me on, I'll say absolutely not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you want to come and audition? No.
No. Yeah, yeah.
So that was one thing I remember when I was, because I was trying to figure out where it started.
Yeah.
And I think it started from there. And then as I got a little bit older, the writing side of it took over and I wanted to be a print journalist. I wanted to write for newspapers and I wanted to write features. And I went to university and I did journalism, print journalism there. And then while I was there, I remember thinking, oh, there's nothing about broadcast in this. And I should have known, obviously, because the whole course was print journalism. There was a little part of it which was online journalism, which I found incredibly boring. And then when I finished, in the last year, we did work experience and they sent me out to a place called the Croydon Advertiser. Well, you could pick where you went.
Yeah.
I picked the Croydon Advertiser because it was local to where I lived. And it was the worst week in the world. It was,
well, what happened?
There was like
nothing,
torrential rain.
Oh, okay, right.
Torrential rain and everything. I had to go and do Vox Pops pretty much every day. So you're going out on the street and you're going, oh, you stop and talk to me in the rain.
I know people who've done that course near where I'm from and it's really difficult that week for a particular reason. And that's that they get sent to somewhere like Roland's Castle, which is like a village of like 40 people, and they go, right, you've got to get three stories by the end of the week. And it's like they're literally knocking on doors. Have you lost your dog? Was the bus late this morning? But it probably stands you in pretty good stead.
It does, because one of the days they sent me to do this piece on council tenants' rent rising.
Right.
So they sent me to the Wadden Estate. It's a big estate in Croydon. And they said, right, go and knock on doors and get reaction from council tenants. And I was like, what? Anyway, I had to go and do it. Piss here down the rain and knocking on these doors. And one of them was like, you're raising my rent. And I was like, no, I'm not. They thought I was from the council. Another one answered the door through the letterbox and was like, what do you want? Another one invited me in and I was quite scared. I was like, can I ever leave? It was just one of those days. Anyway, I wrote the piece and I wrote it well. And they were like, let's come back, do some more work experience. No, never again.
Didn't bother doing it.
Never went back again. And then the way that I got into Sky was because it was so random. In my second year of uni, you know, at uni you have these really long summers.
Yeah.
So you've got like 3 months to do nothing. First summer I was like, I worked. Second summer I was like, right, I'm going to go off somewhere. And I decided to go to Australia. So I just went to Australia on my own. And actually, looking back on it, it's mad really, the circumstances, how they happened. Because I was out in Australia on my own. How old was I? I was 20. I was 19. Mm-hmm. I was 19 and just turning 20. Went out to Australia, went and booked myself on all these different amazing places. I was a bus driver in Cairns for a little while at a hostel and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I used to pick people up from the airports and from the bus stops.
I remember those people because I've been to Australia.
Yeah, I was like, come and stay at our place.
Yeah.
They were like, no, it's great.
Yeah.
And then I started going back down the coast. So I started off in Sydney, stayed there for a little while, jumped up to Cairns where it's hot, then worked my way back down the East Coast. And I was on Fraser Island. the largest sand island in the world.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I think I might have heard that. Yeah,
you have to know that. You know probably. Everything.
No, I don't know it. That's not true.
Well, I think it is the largest sand mass in the world. Anyway.
Well, we were going to talk about you, but since you said that about me, what about... No, carry on.
Brilliant. I was wondering where we were going to get in.
No, carry on.
There's never a day that we work together where you don't interrupt me and start talking about yourself.
Well, listen, so far so good. We're only about 8 minutes in though, so...
So I was on this island, Fraser Island, and again it was absolutely tipping it down. It always seems to rain wherever I go. So all the things that you're supposed to do, all these activities, you can't do. So you're in 4x4s with like a group of 8 people that you don't know.
Yeah.
Obviously you all make friends and it's quite fun. You've got campfires. Anyway, we were at this campfire and there was another 4x4, completely different group. And there's a guy called Andy there, Andy Quinn. And we just started chatting and he was working for ITV Sport at the time as an intern. And we realised that we liked the same things, that we both wanted to work in the media and we both liked sport. And I'd sort of, while I was at uni, I'd started writing match reports for like the rugby team and the football team and stuff like that. So just to have a little bit of experience, because I just started to feel like it was the way I wanted to go and I didn't know how to get into it.
Yeah.
Because again, the course I chose didn't offer sport. And he was chatting. He was like, you know what? Like, you know, that's the kind of thing that you could look to do. You could get work experience somewhere, this and that. And Facebook had just popped up. So we added each other on Facebook and we stayed in touch. And randomly we bumped into each other further down the coast as well.
Right, right.
It just happens when you do the East Coast route in Australia. Bumped into each other further down. We talked about it more. Anyway, we went home. I went back to uni. I had another year left. He went back to work there. And then maybe like, I don't know, 6 months later, so we stayed in touch. He said, oh, I'm at Sky Sports now. And I was like, wow. And he gave me the email address of the woman that was in charge of doing work experience. And he said, I can't remember what her name was now. And he just said, drop her an email. So I just emailed her persistently and just said, look, I'll make teas, I'll do anything, like put me on any sport, put me in any team. And eventually she came back to me and she gave me a week on Soccer AM.
Right.
And I went in and it was genuinely like...
Who was hosting it then?
It was Max.
Was it Max? Okay.
It was Max. It was one of his first years, if not his first year, Max and Helen. And gosh, I remember it clear as day because the whole show... We did the week, it was like a Tuesday to Saturday or something like that. So we did the week leading up to it and I was just offering teas and coffees everywhere. I remember Rocket, I was working with Rocket and he was like, what would you do for this thing? And I was trying to come up with ideas and I absolutely loved it. I was like, this is the best thing. I think I painted a bit of prop work and I loved it. Do you know what I mean? It was anything that I could do.
So you just made yourself useful, basically.
I just enjoyed all of it, yeah. And it sort of fit in my mind. I was looking at what they were doing and I was understanding it. So I was like,
were they paying you at that point?
No. Work experiences, basically. I could have paid them.
Right, okay.
It was like that.
Did they pay for your travel or anything like that?
No.
Blimey, okay.
Work experience is quite brutal. It's like, you know, if you want to come in and work with us, it's your chance to... I always saw it like that, though.
I know what you mean. There's a kind of interesting situation around that, I think, current day where people feel like, you know, it shouldn't be just open to people who can afford to do it. I'm not suggesting you had any kind of privilege, but... Mm. We find it, I think, a lot in media, don't we, where people can afford to do it because they can live with their parents in London somewhere nice and it's easier. And the people who can't afford to do it don't get to do it, which I don't think is right. But I mean, I'm just interested really about whether they would give you any sort of help, but maybe not at that point.
No, it was about an hour and a half travel. So whatever train or car, whichever way I went, I think I drove. It was about an hour and a half and it was a long way. And I thought about trying to stay with friends and that sort of stuff. But you end up just doing it because it's a week. So you're like, you know.
So did they keep you on then?
So basically what happened was... after we did the show on the Saturday and it was hilarious and I loved it. And then I went off and went traveling again. And I couldn't, when I went traveling again, this time I went for 6 months and I couldn't stop thinking about it because I'd graduated. So I kept emailing them when I was away and I said, please, can I come back?
Yeah.
Anyway, they didn't reply. And when I got home, I remember calling up.
Was it because your paint work was bad?
Probably, yeah. Nothing worked. All my ideas were rubbish.
Yeah, this has got to go out on HD, Woods. Yeah. What are you doing?
I called up the switchboard and the switchboard were like, do you work at Sky? And I went, no, but I want to. And they cut me off.
Huh.
And for about a week, I was really hurt. And I was like, is this my dream over? What am I going to do? Anyway, it started emailing again. And then the girl replied and she was like, look, I'm not in this position anymore. Stop emailing me. She gave me somebody else's email.
Right.
And I did the same thing. And then I got another week's work experience. That turned into two. And then they they were like, look, we want to keep you on, but we'll pay you this time.
So you're pretty tenacious then. You're really up for it.
Yeah, I do. I remember one of the first jobs I did when they gave me a role. The first team I worked on was called the pub sports team, which suited me down to the ground. So it was Speedway, darts, snooker and pool.
This is when you moved into your, when you got an actual job.
Yeah.
And you were an assistant producer doing that then, were you?
No, I was a junior, so assistant producer.
Okay, like a runner basically.
Yeah. But I was an individual runner for their team. So at Sky, you become a runner and you work on all the different teams. And then you get selected by a team and you stay on that team. That's how it used to work. So it was almost like, you know, you'd... it was a real rite of passage. You do your badges as a runner and then you get picked. And it was always a bit controversial because during my work experience, the pub sports team were looking for a full-time junior, but they hadn't found anyone in the runner pool that they wanted. And then I did work experience with them as well as a couple of other teams those 2 weeks. And they offered me a job straight off the bat. They said, come and work directly for us. You won't do the runner's rota. And it annoyed a couple of people, but I just didn't care. I was like, I don't care, because I've always been quite, I don't know, if I see something that I want, I've always been quite hardworking to get there. So I loved it. It was a great opportunity for me.
At this point, are you thinking my ultimate end game is to be in front of the camera and on mic and all that kind of stuff? You blatantly had some experience seeing people do that and that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So you're working towards that at this point.
Yeah, at that point I knew, and I remember saying to somebody, I want to be a reporter, and they said, don't tell anyone that.
Right.
And I said, why not? And they went, oh, everybody walks through the door and wants to be a reporter.
Right, okay.
So it was weird. It was a weird culture. It was like, don't tell people that you want to do it. But I never liked that because I thought, yeah, but I want to be the one that does it, though. I don't just want to be one that comes in and goes, oh, I want to be a reporter. You know, you do get that a lot. You do.
Sure.
But you don't know if those people have what it takes to make it. And you shouldn't, I don't think you should discount anybody who says that they want to do it.
But I guess maybe they'll think that if that's your end game and that's the only reason you're there, you won't put the work in the meantime.
Maybe.
Yeah. And having worked with you, I feel like that's a reasonable assumption. No, I'm joking. So you start, and I think most people will, so essentially your story of getting to where you are now, a lot of it's been through, it's not been going to auditions and reading, doing screen testing and reading auto cues like the Sky Sports News guys kind of do. You've been working, you've come up through the sort of inner machinations of the company. Yeah. Most people would have first seen you probably on the darts, is that right?
Yeah.
So when did that come about? When did they first decide they wanted to give you a go at putting you on camera for the darts?
It took ages. I think it took about 6 years. And I'd done every job there was to do in production. I'd gone through from runner, junior, assistant producer, associate. I'd started producing shows as well. I remember the first show that I produced on my own was the Premier League snooker, and it was great with Andy Goldstein. Yeah. Andy Goldstein was my presenter, and my boss was really keen for me to be a producer, and he used to always say to me, you're better suited at that than reporting or presenting. Mm-hmm. But everybody is rubbish at presenting and reporting when they start.
It's, of course.
Do you remember when you're younger? This one thing I used to do with my cousin. Me and my cousin used to record fake radio shows.
I used to do that, yeah.
Right, on your cassette machine.
Yeah, I used to do that, yeah.
Yeah, and then we had a keyboard and we'd make a jingle and it'd be like, ding, ding, ding. And then we'd go, hi, welcome.
Like, you're a much more high-end production than me.
Yeah, we had a proper...
I used to just talk into the little mic.
My cousin was the one on the keyboard.
Right.
And it was hilarious.
Yeah. Like, have you listened back to them?
We can't find them.
Oh, it'd be good if you could find them.
If I could find them, it'd be amazing. But you're right,
there's no substitute. It's almost a bit like a penalty shootout, right? You can't
simulate it.
Exactly.
Can you?
Exactly. So you just got to get on with it.
Yeah, so those things. And when we used to listen back immediately, we'd go, oh, I hate the sound of our own voices. Yeah. Because everybody sounds bad when they start doing it. It's a confidence thing. Anyway, so for ages, I was sort of dissuaded from the idea of doing it. And then I remember, I just remember it so clearly. I'd started doing producing and I thought, well, this is it, I think. This is it. I'm just going to be a producer. And it was fun, but there was no buzz. There was no excitement for me. I don't crave that feeling of being in control of something. And I also didn't want the responsibility.
Right, yeah. It's probably stood you in good stead, though, because it gives you a good understanding of how everything works.
Yeah, absolutely. You know everybody's job in front and behind the camera.
So did you go up to the producer at one point when you were working on the darts and say, look, I want to do this?
Yeah, so I said to my boss, Rory, who is a wonderful man, and I said to him, right, you have a spare camera at the darts, an ENG camera that roams around outside. It's not a live camera. It does pictures from behind the scenes and whatever you want, really. Turns it around and we might use it into the, like, for tease
like
pictures
B-roll
and stuff like
that.
Yeah, exactly. B-roll. I said, look, can I just interview these darts players when they come off stage at the Premier League? Because I know them so well and I used to always do the interviews leading up to any event behind the scenes. So if you, it was like an interview where I'm interviewing you, but you're the only person in shot, I'd always make sure I was one that asked the questions.
Right, okay.
So for 6 years, I'd been doing that behind the scenes, speaking to everybody, practicing my interview technique. And that was my only way in, really. So I knew the players and I knew her character. And I said, can I just go and do like a funny 5 minute interview sketch thing with them, and then put it out on YouTube? If you like it, you like it. And if you don't, I'll make my own YouTube channel. And he was like, fine, whatever, do what you want.
Stop hassling me.
It basically, yeah.
Just be quiet.
Yeah. So I'd always take the winners or whoever was around. I'd do these little interviews. I'd make these funny little packages and I called it Off the Hockey. And I'd voice it. I'd never do pieces to camera because I was too scared.
Yeah.
And then I put them out on YouTube and he liked them. So we put it on the Sky Sports YouTube. And then I just did them every week. And then from then, Sky started a show called Game Changers, which was a kids show. We'd never done that before. And the new producer of the kids show got in touch and she said, I've seen the stuff that you've done for darts. We're looking for a producer slash reporter role. Would you like to come and do it? So then I left the darts, the pub sports team. I went and started doing bits of reporting, so features for that. And then I got a role on NFL when it was in the international series. So when it came to London, two or three games, pitch side reporting. And that was my first live experience in anything.
How nervous were you then?
I was honestly, can I swear?
Yeah.
I was like shitting it, honestly.
But you, so this is a big transition for people listening at home who won't have that much experience working in media or whatever. Going from pre-recorded to live is a big deal.
It's so different.
And to do it on TV when you've done none of it before, it must have been horrendous. I mean, it takes all of, in my limited experience of it, it takes all of your wherewithal to not just completely collapse into a heap crying.
Do you know what the first thing I had to do was? It's just amazing, really, when you think about it. The first thing I had to do live, bearing in mind I've never done live TV, never interviewed anybody before, unless it's pre-recorded and I can make a mistake. The first thing I had to do was introduce Def Leppard to Wembley.
Wow, that's amazing.
So Wembley. So I walked into the middle of Wembley and I was like, oh my God.
So they said, oh, just go out and do that, will you?
Yeah.
Just I know you're doing this bit to camera later, but can you just go and do this? Yeah. And you'd never done that before?
Never done it before in my life. Never introduced anybody, never on TV, never in front of, 80,000 at Wembley?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I remember in the
production
meeting.
You didn't go sort of, hello, Leopard, welcome to Def Wembley or anything like that.
I nearly did. In the production meeting, I always remember we were, you know, like in the back of Wembley, nobody ever really sees like the guts of Wembley, but it's basically a car park inside, underground. And I remember in the production meeting, one of my AP mates, Paddy, had a piece of paper and he was scribbling something on it. And there was like a load of us, like 10 or 15 of us in this meeting. And he held up this bit of paper like this and it just said 80,000.
Wow.
I was like, you are such So I went out and did it, and I can't watch it back because I cringe every time. But I was like, oh, hello Wembley. Like,
were you? Was it really that bad, or are you just being harsh on yourself?
I'm always harsh, but it was pretty shit. I mean, I didn't make a mistake. I didn't call them something else. I didn't call them Queen.
I suppose there's like an element of it where it won't feel like it at the time, but it's a bit of a free hit because they're not there to see you, right?
Exactly,
they're not, they're probably, with respect, they don't know who you are. So they're going to forget about it within like 10 seconds.
They were probably still eating and drinking at that point, the concourse or whatever. And then Def Leppard came on, they were great. And then I interviewed the lead singer. That was probably my second or third. And then you roll with it and then you kind of learn on the job, but you have to, don't you? There's, like you say, there's no way of recreating that environment anywhere else unless you're just, you know, bumping into people on the street.
I think the absolute ideal you want to be, the stage you want to be at, and I don't really do radio, but the stage you want to be at is where you almost forget the mics, the cameras are there.
Yeah.
And then you know when you're... When you see... I think when I see like Dave Jones on Sky Sports, who's who I've met and who's done this actually, and one or two others, you realise how relaxed they are, because as soon as you visit a set or you're playing some sort of small part, you think, God, this is, you know what, it's a lot to remember here.
And
to make it, to make it really natural sounding when you've got someone in your ear, three guests, you can cut at any point, you've got cameras moving around. It's really, really tough.
It's hard. I remember that, what you're talking about there as well, this clicked for me. So after I did Game Changers, I then moved on to Soccer AM Online. So they started a YouTube channel.
That's a demotion.
No.
In there? Oh, no. You're doing really well. We're going to put you online.
No, because it was, I saw it as something completely different because it was, the role was presenter. So I'd gone from being, and I didn't do that much on Game Changers. It was here and there doing bits and bobs. And I still could do the NFL, but I couldn't do Game Changers anymore. So still had the NFL to do. But they auditioned me for Soccer AM. So I went and had this little screen test with them and you basically just chit chat. And yeah, I remember you had to make an audition video and it was just anything. They didn't give you any detail. They just said it needs to be a minute long or something. And I remember I made an audition video about dog pong. So I attached a beer pong, attached a cup to my brother's dog, Maggie. And we basically tried to throw little beer pong balls into it.
So animal cruelty was your screen test, basically. Yeah. But they loved that, presumably.
But I look after that dog quite regularly, so she owes me one. Anyway, so it got me in and it got me the audition and then I got the job. So it was me and Smithy. I don't know if you've met Smithy, but Adam Smith before?
No, I haven't.
Frankie Fryer on Soccer AM back in the day. Anyway, so I did that. And the day that, what you're talking about, I think for a presenter, there's a crossover. It's like you say, where you go from speaking in somebody else's voice to speaking in your own voice.
Yes.
I always remember one of the worst pieces of advice anybody ever gave me. I went for a screen test with someone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sky Sports News.
And somebody
you know when you whisper,
yeah,
the mic still picks it up, right?
There's cameras as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Sky Sports News. I went for a screen test at Sky Sports News when I was about 22.
Could have been worse. It could have been Satanta Sports News.
It could have been, then it would have been really bad. And it destroyed my confidence for about 3 years.
But so when I said earlier you didn't go through that traditional route, it sounds like you did try them, but it didn't work for you.
Oh, I did,
because you,
when you say the traditional route.
What was the advice you were given?
The advice I was given was go and watch other presenters and how they do it and do that.
Right, that's terrible advice.
Terrible advice.
We're going to learn a bit more about that after the break. We've got to take a quick break. And after that also, we're going to talk a bit about your experiences as a football reporter and perhaps as a radio co-host as well.
Oh.
I've got a few pointers actually.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to this Ramble Meets episode with Laura Woods, sponsored by Bet365. Before the break, you were given terrible advice. I've probably given you lots of terrible advice as well. We won't go into that now.
You have.
That you said that was so bad and you bombed so bad in that screen test that it set you back years.
Yeah, it did. Because I'm not a fluid reader and for a very long time after I did that screen test, I thought, am I an undiagnosed dyslexic? I genuinely thought that. Because I couldn't. I sat in front of that auto cue. I'd never done auto cue before and it is very different. And if anyone's thinking about going and doing it, I would urge them just to go and get some practice somewhere. You can download on apps now. You can get an app with a teleprompter.
Yeah.
So you set it at a certain pace.
Yeah.
You have to keep up with it. There's not a person doing it for you, but you've got to get experience because it is very different. Anyway, I sat in front of that auto cue and I couldn't get through maybe two lines without stuttering or making a mistake or misreading it.
And what were you doing for a job at this point? You were at Sky Sports somewhere else. else?
I was working in production.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Yeah. So basically, they're almost two different companies, Sky Sports News and Sky Sports. So I was in Sky Sports working on the pub sports team as an assistant producer, which, by the way, is the best job. So if you're thinking about getting into production, the assistant producer is amazing. I went and I just decided, I'll give it a go, because I used to do these open screen tests so you could apply for them, and then they go, yeah, whatever. So I went and did it, and it genuinely, it ruined me, because I finished and I was so distraught. I thought, the job that I thought I could do, I actually can't do, and I could never see another way into reporting or presenting other than that route. Because for a long time, unless you're a proven presenter at Sky Sports, I don't know anyone else that has done it another route other than doing it that way.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any role models to say, there's another way of doing it. Anyway, so in my head for a really long time, I thought, I can't do it. Went into producing and thought, this is it now. But I always had that niggle. I always had that sort of, what if I could just, you know, I felt like I had more to give. And I'm the youngest of three kids. So I'm, you know, I'm always being like, look at me. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
You don't notice that ever, right?
No, the listeners probably don't know that, but as I actually know you, I absolutely know that.
Yeah. Right. So fast forward to then getting this chance on Soccer AM, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was everything about Soccer AM online was lighthearted, fun. It was football. It was working with guys my own age. And we just got to go and do the most amazing things, and we got to interview the most amazing footballers, but we weren't sitting down going, tell me about your life.
You're just having fun with
them,
right?
A bit like what you are, yeah.
But I think people, so I don't know, I don't have any experience of Soccer AM at all behind the scenes, so I would say I'd probably subscribe to this a touch as well. I think people would perhaps assume that for a girl, for a young woman working in that environment, it's a bit of a bear pit, and it was difficult. Was it difficult for you at any point?
No. Soccer AM or just Sky?
Well, both.
So,
well, Sky more broadly because of what's happened in the past, yes, which you will know about. So I guess the answer would be to Soccer AM and then to Sky more broadly.
For Soccer AM, no, never. Because the guys that I worked with on Soccer AM were just the best guys. Like I said, all my age, all of them pretty much had come through the ranks at Sky as well. So all very humble and down to earth.
Right.
Sky's not an easy place to progress in. You have to work hard, and you will get found out. If you're not working or you don't really want to be there, you'll get found out.
Yeah, I worked there 4 years, got nowhere left.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm living testament to that.
Yeah.
Or if perhaps not just those examples there, but if perhaps you don't really have an awful lot of talent, it gets found out quite as easily. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But you're flourishing, so good on you.
You can make up for a lack of talent with hard work, right?
So they tell me.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So no, never ever felt it on Soccer AM. I've always felt comfortable in the presence of men because of my brothers.
Sure.
So I've never had that worry. Whereas actually, it can be a little bit intimidating, and I don't doubt that Sky can be in a very intimidating place to come if you're a woman.
For anyone or for a woman particularly?
I think for anyone, just in general, because it's such a big company, and you do get a little bit overwhelmed by it, but it's full of wonderful people. It really is.
Yeah.
And like I say, really hardworking people. So everybody's quite humbled at Sky because they've been through it.
Yeah.
When I walked in there when I was a woman, and I was on the end of the era where Sky was a different place to work.
Yeah.
So when I joined, it was almost, the culture had changed completely. Yeah. And it was a great place to be. But I don't doubt that Sky has always been incredibly supportive, but it only protects you so far. You know,
there's like 15,000 people working there, right?
Yeah.
So it's a difficult, it's a big company.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to stand up and get noticed as well. You have to really put yourself in the firing line for a lot of that. But no, I've never felt uncomfortable for being a woman ever. And I've always felt as well, because the producers demand so much of you, you're not there for fun. You've got a job to do. Whatever role I've done, whether it's a runner through to producer, through to reporter or presenter, you're being paid for a job. And if you can't do it, you're out. So that's nothing to do with your gender. If I can't do something, it's whether I'm a woman or a man, I'm not doing my job. So that has always been my priority, is to go and do the best job I can and to go and impress as much as I can.
What about the world of football more broadly then?
So basically, what I must say before I forget about it is that changing of your voice. So if there's any presenters or budding presenters that want to listen, I want to do it. The one thing that made me transition from just somebody talking in front of a camera to myself in front of a camera was we went to the Euros. So I remember I pitched this idea, me and the boys in the team pitched this idea to go to the Euros 2 years ago and in France. And we were like, right, we're just going to travel around. We're just going to go and visit as many different grounds as we can, speak to as many different fans as we can and just have fun. And what came out of it was just this amazing insight into what we had no footage. You know, it wasn't a Sky show. You know, it wasn't the Euros wasn't shown on Sky, so we had no footage of the actual games. So it was
just 2016
around it. Everything around it, traveling these places, meeting these fans in the street, going to the fan parks. It was just great fun, and we had this contract with Facebook. It was where Facebook Live had just come up, so we had this contract with them where we had to do a 10-minute long Facebook Live every day. So it didn't matter where we were.
Right.
And, you know, this is a month long. So you're getting into it where you're like, oh, sometimes there's a break in games as well, especially between the semis and the finals and that sort of stuff. So when it was the group stages, there was loads to talk about. But we'd get to the point where we'd be
hungover.
Always. Yeah. Maybe still drunk a lot of the time. Those are great. And actually that might be the suggestion. Just get drunk and do it. But it was sitting in front. I remember this one morning, we were sitting in front of there and we were talking about Ronaldo. And we were talking about why Ronaldo is the best player in the world. And we were just sitting there and there was no script and we were just talking. As we were talking, we always used to read out the comments from the viewers, and some of them were hilarious and some of them were rude, and you just get, you know, your skin gets very thick when you work in TV or online or whatever. And we were just encouraging people to send in their suggestions. And when I finished, I was like, wow, that was really easy. And it was because you forget what you're trying to be and you just become yourself. And it's as much airtime as you can physically get, even if it's just a Facebook Live to your mates. You've got to get in the habit of talking comfortably with a microphone in front of
people. See through it if you're portraying some sort of role or you're being someone else, it's just so much effort to keep it up.
You can hear it, can't
you? Exactly. And besides, people will see through it because you'll eventually fall off and the mask will slip or whatever.
Exactly.
You know? But so now you're working obviously overwhelmingly in football.
Yeah.
And we talked a bit a second ago about Sky Sports and the culture there. Was it when you finally broke into football, and obviously now we see you on the weekends on Sky Sports and on the Premier League coverage and all that kind of stuff, has the world of football been welcoming to you as a new person into it and as a woman?
Yeah. Internally, the world of football has been very welcoming. Externally, online,
it's tough, yeah?
That is tough, yeah. And the early parts of it, so when I started working on Soccer AM, it was a bit of a younger audience then. And they are much more willing because they see more women in these positions than the older generation. They're much more willing to accept it. They don't really have a problem with it. But you will obviously get the odd kid in his bedroom who's probably 12 years old in his underwear, writing something about the size of your boobs, or you know, the fact that you're talking to a player must mean that you're having sex. Do you know what I mean? That sort of stuff. You get that even now. You will, and I don't think you'll ever get away from that.
Is it just younger men or is it older men that do that?
No, it's still older men. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then when you move into the realms of mainstream football coverage, I think at the beginning part of it, I mean, actually working in TalkSport, so TalkSport came first, and I was doing Soccer AM and I was doing features for the Premier League for football, and then TalkSport came along, and that for me was a completely new audience. It was just being exposed to a whole different level of audience. And TalkSport is 90%, maybe even 95% male. And at the beginning, I think...
You mean the audience or the employees?
Oh, both.
Yeah, it is both. Okay.
At the beginning, when I hear someone who's nervous, I can hear it in their voice.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of... Like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like blood to a shark.
Yeah.
So if a TalkSport audience hear nerves, they are straight on you.
Yeah.
And they are really, and they can be very unforgiving. And with nerves come mistakes. So even though you know what you're talking about, you've said it a million times before, you might make a mistake that you would never make, but you've made it, and you've made it on mainstream radio, and it's out there, and the audience are waiting for you to slip up. And that is the one thing that I find, as a woman, I do find that... Somebody once said it to me, you have to work harder if you're a girl because the height that you fall from is greater.
Yeah.
And that is a really horrible quote, but it's true.
I think working with you over the last year or so has shown me how much easier I have it, purely because we essentially occupy the same role on the same show. And I mean, at best, well, sorry, at worst, people are largely indifferent to me. Like if I make a mistake or say something stupid, I might get a tweet.
Yeah.
On Twitter. And I've got a decent amount of followers. It's not that there's no one out there. But with you, it's like if I ever happen upon your Twitter and I click on your profile and you do take it head on a lot of the time and you do sort of give a bit back, which I think is, you know, it's entirely up to you, but I personally quite enjoy it. But you have so much more to deal with on such a regular basis. Yeah. That's why I'm kind of interested to tap into how you feel about that, and how is it ever really sort of knocked you off course? Have you ever second guessed about whether you want to be doing it, or do you just take it as part of the gig, which to me would be sad, but I would understand why that is the case.
Yeah, I'll give you a good example that of a mistake that I've made recently.
I've got a few here actually.
I once, and this wasn't even that long ago, I was doing team news, and Jonjo Kenny was on the bench, and I said Jonjo Shelvey,
right?
Because it just popped in my mind. Yeah. Just popped in my mind.
Have you heard of a show called The Football Ramble? Because those mistakes are made probably once every 10 minutes without fail, every show. So really, it's not the end of the world, is it?
But for me, it was, because I'm a perfectionist in one, but also I know how badly one little mistake like that can go down.
Yeah.
And then you sit there and you think, I want to tell everybody that I know the difference, and it's just a mistake that I made. But the worst thing about it was that I didn't even hear myself say it. So right. When I finished the team news, I went, that was all right, actually. Yeah. Went onto Twitter and I had I must have had
so people jump
tweets
on you straight away. But yeah. But was the feedback in that case, was that, did you realise you made a mistake there? Or was that, you're a fucking woman, you shouldn't be doing it, and this is proof that you shouldn't be doing it?
No, I'll tell you what it was, and it's got easier. The more people know you and the more you work in football and radio and TV, the audience get better, because not they don't get better, but they grow with you. So they know you and they hear you enough and they understand you. I think it's a case of new faces in sport can rub people up the wrong way, and a new female face in sport can rub people up even more. So the majority of those were laughing. They were like, oh, Jojo Kenny, like, where did he pop up from? Because it was funny, you know, it was funny. But you will have the odd one. I might get 20 tweets of people laughing along with me, and I reply to them going, oh yeah, what a nightmare, you know, blah, blah, blah. These things happen. And then I'll get one saying, you don't know what you're talking about. I remember there was a thread, actually. Someone clipped it up and put it online, and it was something, I can't remember what the words were, but somebody tagged me in it. And I wish to this day I'd never even come across it. And basically they'd clipped it up and they'd said something along the lines of, you know, great journalism from Sky Sports or something like that. And then there were just tons of these tweets about me being a woman, me being shit, me being this and that. And the thing is, it's like, you make mistakes in every day in any job that you do.
Sure.
We are just in the business of making mistakes on air.
In the public eye.
In an era where you can't get away from it.
And also that is, I don't think people fully understand the discipline that is needed, because a lot of people can go to work with a hangover on a Monday, sit in an office, people won't hassle them, they'll get away with it, and they'll phone it in for that day and go, right, tomorrow I'll do the work and I'll catch up.
Exactly.
And in this game, you can't do that. You have to be so disciplined. You have to be very disciplined about what you do the night before, your preparation beforehand. And then not only that, if you do make a mistake or anything doesn't go as well as you want it to, in your case, you're going to get 500 man children telling you that you shouldn't be in there in the first place because of a particular gender you are, which obviously is unforgivable, but sadly appears to be the way of the world. But what do you think is the best way of combating that? Because you are someone who's quite forthright in it. You take them on, you challenge them. Mm. And I spoke to Max Rushton, also of this parish, as we know, before, and he's quite similar. I know it's a different type of thing, but he'll go into bat and he'll read them out on air and all the rest of it, which personally I don't really do. Do you think it's the best way of approaching it, doing it that way? Or do you think it's just what works for you, basically?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm the same as you. I don't like giving them airtime. I wouldn't read it out on air.
But on Twitter you do it.
But on Twitter, I don't reply to all of them.
Because that would be impossible.
Yeah. Because there's so many, though. But the way that I deal with it is, if I can think of a funny retort, then I'll send it.
But do you not think that gives them like the option of publicity? And it encourages other people to do it, because ultimately they just want a reply. They just want validation, don't they?
Well, no, what I find actually is that if I reply, if it's funny enough, I feel that I've actually, Twitter can be used in two ways. Like you can take it for all the negatives, but you can also take it for the positives. And actually I have a really nice following as well. Like the people that have followed me, I think it's because a lot of my followers might have started when, you know, I was doing bits and bobs here or there. And now I've moved up a little bit. So I get some really lovely support from people saying that we've seen how far you've come and that sort of thing. And also I think sometimes when you reply to somebody and it is a negative tweet and you say something to either make light of it or make light of them, what you end up doing is getting other people getting involved. I'm not really in the business of quote retweeting something.
Right.
I would just reply directly.
Yeah. So otherwise it looks a bit like you're setting the dogs on people.
Yeah,
right?
And I wouldn't want to do that. And to be honest, it's only really lately that when you reply, it pops up in other people's feeds.
That's right.
It never used to happen. So you could reply directly to somebody and it could go under the radar. And the thing is, I'm teaching myself every day to just not reply at all. Yeah. And I'm getting better at it because these people, like you say, sometimes you reply and that's all they want. They just want one. God,
they want to know you've seen it. Like
exactly,
they, and if you don't reply,
yeah,
they don't know that you've seen it, and you don't give them the validation they need.
I had one the other day sometimes it catches you in a bad mood. So you can be in a bad mood, or you can be particularly vulnerable, and it's the worst if you come off there and you feel you haven't done a great job. And this happens as well. You find it's the same with anything. It's the same with a professional footballer. He's got all the talent in the world, but he'll have a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, we've got all the experience that we've worked on in our past, but we could just have a really shit day, and that could happen. And it does.
And you always know. You're the first person to know as well, right?
With you more regularly than most.
No, that's a shame. Yeah. I mean, so that's unfortunately also true. So I can't complain about that. Yeah.
But you could come off air, and especially when you work the really early mornings, you're tired and you're vulnerable. You feel like you just want to go back to bed and get in your duvet and be protected. And you might have someone say something. And I remember there was this one guy, and he was just. You can tell when they want to be particularly hurtful. So they will pick out something. And I think he said, I had a big nose. And he said, I had this. And I said, I had that. And he said, why don't you go and get a nose job? And why don't you go? And I was like, I quite like my nose. And then I was like, oh, have I got a big nose? And then you sit there and you think about it and you're like, oh, no. And then you realise that these people, they don't have a photo of themselves.
No.
And you go through their line and they're only tweeting hatred to people. And you sit there and you think, oh, what a sad existence that you've created a Twitter profile just to have a go at people.
Yeah.
And you start to think, actually, what sort of a person are they really? Yeah. And should you value their opinions?
But the general rule is people don't hate on people doing worse than they are.
Yes.
And I remember seeing Joe Rogan or something the other day saying, yeah, do you think Michael Jordan sits down on YouTube and starts posting comments about how he hates people? It doesn't happen. You know, people have got other things in their lives, successful people.
It's true.
But so you, I mean, the public aside, and of course we're living in an era at the moment, it feels like, where there's a lot of prejudice, a lot of bigotry, and it feels like it's getting worse. And fine, I don't really want to tackle that at the moment, but putting that to one side, you think... Presumably, you feel like the industry itself and football has been pretty good to you, and you've had a good experience overall. But clearly, you must. I mean, maybe you don't agree. But is it a case that the industry, both industries, still have a way to go where it comes to treating women properly in general?
Yeah, I definitely think in general. I think that
just more representation, more better working practices, that kind of thing. Or,
but honestly, Luke, I've never seen it better. There's so much support. I think, and I can only speak from my own experiences, but there's so much support within the two companies that I work for predominantly, Sky Sports and TalkSport. And I understand that there's a way to go to level things out, because at the moment it's not level for a number of different reasons. It might be pay, it might be representation, it might be the level that females can get to. And that's not just in front of the camera, that's also behind camera, you know, putting females in managerial roles, so that when other women come to work, they have something to aspire to. Because I remember there was Sky did something. It was about women in leadership, and Sky sent something out, and they're very on this. They want to be at the forefront of how to get women in powerful positions more. And they said that it's not necessarily that women aren't getting the jobs, it's that they're not applying for the jobs. And the reason they're not applying for is because they have this innate sense that they won't get the jobs because of what's happened before them.
Sure.
So you've got to try and change that somehow. You've got to change that culture by saying, no, it's, you don't need to be intimidated by this environment. Yes, it's predominantly male at the moment, but we are trying to change that. Mm. And you need support to make that happen. So of course, you know, I'm not going to say that I haven't experienced one or two elements of direct sexism, because I have, but those are from individuals, and those are from individuals that I would not say represent either of the companies that I work for. I mean, I'll tell you, I remember, I won't name a name, but there was one person who said to me, you're not here for your experience or for your presenting talent. You're here to address the balance. Mm. And it was a real throwaway comment, but it was a direct comment. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, almost a wolf in sheep's clothing comment. Mm. And it stuck with me, and I thought about it. And then what it actually did for me was it did the opposite. Rather than make me feel like I wasn't worthy of it, it made me think you're probably threatened by it. And I think if you can try and change those negative thoughts into something that spurs you on, you can actually make a positive out of most things.
Yeah. But you shouldn't, I mean, in that case, you shouldn't have to, but I understand that you've got to try and make a silk purse out of a pig's ear in that kind of case.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. And I suppose it comes down to also, in light of comments like that, you don't want to, as a woman within that particular industry, you don't want to feel like the exception. You don't want to have a situation where that person can even get away with saying that, because you can look around and go, well, actually, that's bullshit, because there's a woman there. And so you don't feel like the exception. You feel like just a normal employee, which is the most important thing. So were you going to say something then?
I was just going to say, that is another thing, Luke. What you don't want to feel as a woman is that you've just been given the role because you're a woman.
Of course, absolutely,
And that's hard. And that's something,
or because you're an ethnic minority or whatever it may be.
Yeah, exactly. And that is something that you battle with sometimes, because you listen to enough people saying it and sometimes you think, is that why I'm here? Mm. But I always think what you've got to remember with these kind of situations is the reason women aren't there in the first place is because it hasn't been offered to them. They've never had that opportunity. Yeah. So women filtering in should just be a rite of passage anyway. It shouldn't be.
Absolutely. And I think, do you know what? Since working with you over the last year or so, shockingly, really, it's been the first time I've worked in close quarters with a woman doing the same job as me. And I feel like, obviously, it isn't about me, but very, very quickly, I've come through making podcasts for 10 years and 6, 7 of those years, no one really gave a shit. Yeah. And I feel like I've come up the hard way. I've worked really hard. And the reason I've got where I am is because I've worked harder than everyone else. Now, that may or might not be true. But the reality is probably that if I was a woman, I wouldn't be here where I am now. The amount of privilege I am given and afforded every day in my life just from being a white man is something I never really wanted to consider or had to consider, probably until about a year ago. And now it's obvious. It's just obvious. And so you've had to fight very hard in a different way to how I have to get where you are, you know?
Do you know what?
Obviously, you're doing far better than me, so you've done well.
It's come on, woman.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of reasons why I wanted to do radio. And one of them, predominantly, was because I wanted to get better at communicating. And radio, there's nowhere to hide. The same as podcasts, right? There's nowhere to hide. You've got all this time to fill.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get better at it, and I wanted to get more experience. And I've always been obsessed with radio. I don't know the elements of it. I suppose when I was younger, making my own little radio shows and that sort of stuff. But there was another element that when I got there, I felt so comfortable because I was behind a curtain, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So another thing that you get accused of when you work in TV is, I get this all the time, you're only where you are because you slept with however many people.
Yeah.
You sucked someone off, you did this, you did that. Sorry that those words came out of my mouth.
I'm surprised it took like 45 minutes for that to come out, actually. Yeah, okay.
These are direct tweets that I get people sending me. You're only here because this and that. So when I went and worked on the radio, it was almost a relief because I felt, well, no one can say to me, you're there because of the way that you look.
Sure.
Or you're there because you're a girl and they need a girl on screen or whatever. It was like a, well, I'm here and I'm speaking and all you get is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I almost felt solace in that.
Yeah.
And then I think about it and I think that's such a sad case of events solace in it.
It feels to me that, like, really what you're talking about is almost, I get to use an analogy, I get to walk through like a nice field and you've basically got to walk through a minefield dodging all these different things that could blow up at any moment. I don't even think about it because I'm like, what's she worried about? This field's amazing. Yeah.
but don't get me wrong, people open doors for you as well, and that's really nice.
Yeah,
you know, some people are real gentlemen.
Yeah,
they might open a car door for you, close it for you, get you a coffee, that's fine.
Present company, excuse me.
I'll take
right?
those, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So briefly then, before we wrap up and get out of here, because we've been in there for ages and you've got other more important paid work to do. What's next for you? What do you want to do? Do you want to prioritise your radio? Do you want to prioritise your TV? Where would you like to see yourself, you know, your ultimate ambition? Yeah. I know there's a temptation to always be looking for the next thing, but where do you sort of see yourself going?
I've always been ambitious. That's the main, probably, if I can call it a quality, sometimes it doesn't feel like a quality, but I always want to strive to be the best at what I'm doing and then get to the next level. And I think at the moment I've got so much more development to do in the roles that I'm in. That's where my focus is. I've got to get really good at those. You know what I mean?
And
obviously in the future, you know, my dream would be to be at the forefront of either. I don't want to stop working in one medium. I want to keep working in radio. I want to keep working in TV. It is tiring, and there's only so many days in the week, but I love it. You know, we're not, this doesn't feel, doesn't feel like a job.
No, yeah, I know
what you mean. The travel bit does. That's the tiring bit. You know, the traveling is a nightmare, but it doesn't feel like when I'm working on anything, like even this, I just feel like we're having a chat because we are. And whether or not you're being paid for it, you're going to go home and watch the football.
Yeah.
And you're going to talk about it. Yeah. You're just doing it with a microphone in front of you.
So I was hoping you would say that you wanted to have some sort of like Michael Parkinson kind of chat show, like Jonathan Ross or Graham Norton type thing.
Do you know what?
Would you do that? If someone said to you, Graham Norton's just chucking it in, do you want to do it?
Yeah, I don't think I've got the same personality.
Would you do it though? Well, I agree with that, but just in principle, would you do it?
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, any option that you have in this line of work to progress and to do something more challenging, that's the main thing for me. If it's a challenge, then I'll take it. Mm. But I love the element of speaking to footballers. That's one of my favourite things, actually. You know, all the broadcasting aside and all the live experience and the live game, which, by the way, I wouldn't switch for anything. I love speaking to people. They don't have to be footballers.
Yeah.
But just finding out more about them. I find humans interesting.
Good. Well, we find you interesting, Lauren. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks
for having me. It's been great talking to you, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
This episode of Ramble Meets was sponsored by Bet365.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.